So we're preparing for LL. Now, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be doing a little bit about the life of Rabbi Akiva. Okay, we're going to be talking about some of the stories of Rabbi Akiva and the personality of Rabbi Akiva, the way of being of Rabbi Akiva, and from that, again, through the insights of Rabbeinu Yonah on one of the Mishnayos and Pirkei Avos that we have learned historically before several years ago, we're going to have that as sort of like an example of tshuva. Okay, so again, we are at the time of year right now where we went from, and again, it feels very intense, you know, like again, I don't know why I'm surprised every year like this, but it really does feel intense, right? We go from Churban into Nechama and almost straight into Elozman, right? So we have like Churban Bayis where we have the 3 weeks and then we culminate in Tisha B'Av. Right afterwards, we have Shabbos Nachamu where we really spend time like thinking and processing Nechama, right? Followed usually very quickly by Tu B'Av, which is again like a very happy holiday of ours. And again, within like a few weeks, we slide right into Elozman. So interestingly, the arc of Rabbi Akiva's life follows the opposite trajectory, right? So this time of year, we go from Churban to Nechama to Tshuva. Rabbi Akiva's life, interestingly, goes the opposite direction. It goes from Tshuva to Nechama to Churban. But that's not really, you know, exactly the point which direction it goes. But again, this kind of the time of the Zman that we're in is really encapsulated by the life of Rabbi Akiva. And that's what we're doing today, is learning a lesson from that, from his life, okay? So if I was going to, if you were going to write a biography of Rabbi Akiva, what would you include? Again, the beginning of this is not going to be necessarily chidushim. We're going to be talking about the life of Rabbi Akiva. But again, it's not chidushim. We know a lot about him already. So what kinds of things would you include in a biography of Rabbi Akiva? Anything. Tell me.
His background.
What, meaning what?
Like where he came from.
Where did he come from?
A dynasty, I mean, generations of Gerim, or
good.
I think he might have been a Ger himself or
good.
Something.
Very good.
He was like an I don't think he was an Amoritz, but he didn't know any Torah or something. He
good. Did
Achamim, that whole thing with the, it's kind of like a question that like, there already are biographies, so everything that I've read about it is coming to my head.
Exactly, good, exactly, right? Meaning we are very familiar with the life of Rabbi Akiva, right? Rabbi Akiva being one of the center figures of Chazal, that Chazal actually spent a long time telling us not only his Piskei Halacha, but a lot about his life, right? Maybe more than anyone else in Chazal, I think more than anyone else in Chazal, we really know the life of Rabbi Akiva, not from like archaeological digs, but from Chazal themselves telling us so much about him. So again, we know that he is basically the quintessential Ger, Baal Tshuva, right? He seems to be from a family of converts. He himself doesn't seem to be a convert. He seems to be a Baal Tshuva. Sorry, my camera on my computer is broken, so I like have this like attached camera on top, and I'm trying to make it look like not weird. So sorry about that little jiggling over there. Right, he's definitely a Baal Tshuva. Exactly like Chana says, he refers back to himself as an Ama Aretz, meaning he's not just like Stama Baal Tshuva that like, oh wow, he just, you know, by accident, he happened to be like, you know, Tinok Shenishba, and then finally he come, I yell at, I can hear myself echoing on your thing, I think. Not anymore, thank you. So, good, okay? Good, he seems to be an Ama Aretz in his previous life, so to speak. What else do we know about him?
He died Al Kadosh Hashem.
He died Al Kadosh Hashem, right, in a nice way or in a brutal, horrible way?
He was one of the Sarah Malchus and with Iron Combs.
Good. One of the Sarah Rabbi Malchus, good. We're going to be looking a little bit more deeply into that. Good. What else do we know about him? So we know about his beginning, we know about his end, right? He's a Baal Tshuva, he was an Am Aretz, we know that his end, he dies Al Kiddush Hashem, publicly, brutally. He lost most of his Talmidim, good.
He was married to Rachel, he was married twice.
He was married twice?
Huh?
He was married twice?
Yeah.
I never encountered that in any of the Chazals that I read.
Yeah, he was married twice, one of, I think, Ternus Rufus, or one of the Roman emperors that he
afterwards, yeah. Oh yeah, after.
Sent him, send him somebody to, like, you know, whatever.
Right.
And then it didn't happen, and there's a whole thing where he spit, he laughed, he cried.
Right.
He had kids.
Good.
I don't know where he's buried, I think. In Israel.
He's buried in Israel. Good.
Spot.
Yeah. Spot in Syria. Okay, good, but they're not, yeah, okay, good. Good, good. So we know we have a lot of background of Rabbi Akiva, again, all from Chazal, right? The pieces of the many, many stories that Chazal put together for him. So the reason that it's important to look at the life of Rabbi Akiva, right, is not because we're looking at his like historic personality or his character, right, or anything like that. We're looking at it because Chazal spent an inordinate amount of time telling us not only about the context of Rabbi Akiva's life, right, what happened to him and what he did and what he said, but also the content of his life, who he was. And that's where we're going to spend most of our time. So again, the background of Rabbi Akiva, if we're talking about Rabbi Akiva starts, again, just coming off of the Zaman that we're in right now is really just an incredible thing, right? Rabbi Akiva was alive during the Chorban Bayis. We don't know where he was. He doesn't seem to reference like, but he seems to be like like around 20 or 30 years old if you back calculate how old he was at the time. Again, we don't know where he was. He appears on the scene as a Talmud of the Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai having survived the Chorban. But again, very soon becomes their colleague. He does tshuva when he's 40, right? At some point, he becomes one of the Gedolei Chazal, and again, a peer of his teachers. And then towards the end of his life, he loses 24,000 Talmidim. He supports the Bar Kokhba rebellion. Really, Rabbi Akiva was one of the main Chazal, one of the main supporters of the Bar Kokhba rebellion. He really thought that Bar Kokhba was Mashiach. Bar Kokhba had a very short, like less than 2 years of a reign in which he like wrestled back the independence of Judea from the hands of the Romans. And starts building the foundations of the third Beis HaMikdash, right? Which is really like incredible to think about. That's the point that they were at. At some point, it becomes clear to Chazal, including Rabbi Akiva, that Bar Kokhba is not Mashiach. He goes like a little, you know, neurotic and starts doing things that definitely Mashiach, so to speak, would never do. They backpedal. Bar Kokhba is slaughtered along with basically all his supporters. And very soon afterwards, Rabbi Akiva is caught teaching publicly, which was against the Roman edict. He's thrown into prison. There are Chazals that talk about the stories of people getting Piskei Halacha from Rabbi Akiva in prison. So he spent between months and years in prison, and ends by being killed by the Roman government. So really, again, it's a time of life that we don't talk about. This is like one of the things that I'm very passionate about and need to like do a little bit more research on. It's like as if the Nazis had won the Holocaust. You know, like that's the backdrop of Rabbi Akiva's life. The bad guys won. They won Chorban Bayis. They slaughtered tons of Jews. Bar Kokhba rebellion, you know, seizes, and then they like systematically kill the 10 greatest Torah scholars of, you know, many generations. So it's really just like, you know, a kind of a brutal time that he lives through. And yet he is our, you know, quintessential example of tshuva and of nechama. So that's what we're going to do, okay? I'm going to read to you some of these stories that we spoke about. I'm going to read to you some of them inside. I'm going to pull up the source sheet. I'm going to share the source sheet. We're going to learn them inside. As we learn them, I don't want you to be thinking only about the stories that they're sharing. These, most of us recognize, we're familiar with them. I want you to be thinking on a different plane. I want you to be thinking about what Chazal is trying to teach us as we learn through these things about Rabbi Akiva, about who Rabbi Akiva was. Okay? Not only what happened to him and what he did and like the back and forth about it, but why, not necessarily, like what way of being unites these stories of Rabbi Akiva and what that teaches us about Rabbi Akiva as a person, right? As a, so to speak, inspiration. I almost never use that word, right? But as somebody who Chazal want us to learn from, assuming that's the intention that they're sharing these stories, what about Rabbi Akiva do you think Chazal wants us to learn from some of these stories? I'm going to ask you to link all of them. There are four of them. I want you to try to see if you could draw a thread between all of them. Which thread you draw, you're going to see, is like not really so important. We're going to be working off the thread that, you know, struck me the most because, you know, obviously I had to build this off of something, but it doesn't really matter, you know, and I might just as well be as convinced by one of yours as I am of mine, okay? So the point isn't to get the right answer. The point is, what way of being a Rabbi Akiva do you think that Chazal is trying to teach us by telling us these stories about him, okay? So here we go. We are going to do four stories throughout the life of Rabbi Akiva in order, okay? So, Ma Hayat Chila Socha Rabbi Akiva. This is the first one, the origins of Rabbi Akiva, right? This is fascinating because Chazal is really asking us, like, where did Rabbi Akiva come from? I don't think they ask this about, you know, many of Chazal. Where did he come from? Ma Hayat Chila Socha Rabbi Akiva. What are his, you know, origins? Amru ben Arbiim Shana Hayav Velo Shana Klum. Right? He was 40 years old and he hadn't learned anything. Stop here for a second, right? Rabbi Akiva several times in his life back references this stage of his life where he was in Amma Aretz. And he says, you know, like, you know, when I was in Amma Aretz, I used to say, somebody give me a rabbi to learn with so I can bite him like a donkey. And his students go, Rabbi Akiva, that's the wrong phrase. The phrase is, like, the idiom is, I can bite him like a dog. And Rabbi Akiva's like, nope, I said that on purpose. Dogs bite and they don't break bones, but donkeys bite and they break bones. All right, so he had a certain vehemence against Chazal, really, when he was growing up, so to speak. I don't know, he's 40, you know, when he was like an Am Haaretz, so to speak, at this stage of his life. And there's several times that he, like, he sighs about his stage of being an Am Haaretz. And when, again, he marries the daughter of Rachel, Rachel, who's the daughter of Kalba Sevua, right? And when Rabbi Akiva returns after those 24 years and is now basically the Gadol HaDor, Kalba Sevua goes out to meet Rabbi Akiva, not knowing that he's Rabbi Akiva, wanting to annul his vow of having disinherited Rachel and Rabbi Akiva. And he says to Rabbi Akiva this, that he wants to annul the vow. Rabbi Akiva recognizes him, and he said to him, you know, did you make the promise to disown them on false pretenses, right? Had you known that he would have been a Torah scholar, would you have disowned him? And Kalba Sevua said, if I had thought that he would ever have learned a single Mishnah, I would not have disowned him. Is that a fascinating story? Which Rabbi Akiva is not like, you know, this poor, you know, Baal Tshuva who, you know, he's like, he really is like the bottom rung and becomes Rabbi Akiva. Okay, so just very important. Maybe it's not so important, but it's like fascinating and important, I'm sure, in some capacity. Okay, Lo Shana Klum. He didn't know anything. Again, he didn't know a single Mishnah. He didn't know anything. Pam Achas Haya Omed Al Pia Be'er. He's standing by a well. You're like, oh, I remember the story, right? Amar Micha Kak Evan Zu. And he says, who carved out this well? Again, he apparently sees some rock in which there's like a hole that got smoothly in it, like indented from a continuous drip of water. And he says, mi chakak evenzu, right? Chakak means chiseled, which is a very different kind of shape you would find if someone chiseled the rock. He said to the people there, who chiseled the rock? And they kind of roll their eyes at him. Amru, lo hamayim shetadir no flima leha b'chol yom. Amru lo, Akiva, yeta korea avanim shachakumayim. They're like, come on, it's what else could it be except for the water that drips on it every day? Rabbi Akiva, don't you know this quote? I think it's from Eve that says that the water erodes stone. Miyad haya Rabbi Akiva dun kal v'chomer ba'atzmo. Again, a very fascinating lashon. Being a dun a kal v'chomer is basically the halachic process that Rabbi Akiva then engages in for the rest of his life, right? To be dun a kal v'chomer. And his first kal v'chomer that he was ever done was done on himself. Right? That's the first thing. He had kind of the programming of himself all along. And the first time he like thinks like Chazal, he applies it most importantly to himself. Don kal v'chomer ba'atzmo. Ma rach pesel es akasha divrei Torah shekasha kebarzel achas kama v'kama. Just like the soft drip of water erodes this hard rock, how much more so the hardness of the Torah will erode my heart. That the Torah will erode my heart and make a hole in my heart that is basar v'dam, that is soft. Okay, and immediately he goes to learn, and him and his son sit, next to this Rebbe, and they both learn the Aleph Beis, and go haya lomid v'holech ad shalamad kol haTorah kula. And he just keeps doing that. That's just what he just keeps doing. He just keeps learning until he learns all the Torah. Okay, so again, what does that tell you about the essence of Rabbi Akiva? What's Chazal? One of the many. Right, but think about it. What's Chazal trying to teach you by telling you that story? Okay, this is another story. All that God does is for the good. Okay, embarrassingly, I kind of thought this was like a Chassidus Rebbe story, and I was like, that's embarrassing. It's Rabbi Akiva. Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav Mishum Rabbi Meir V'chein Tana Mishmei De Rabbi Akiva. La'olam yehei Adam Ragi Lomar Kod Avad Rachmana Latav Avad. A person should always be regulated, should always be habituated into saying everything that God does is for the good. Everything that the merciful one does is for the good. Giha De Rabbi Akiva De Havei Kazil Be'orcha. He goes to a city and he tries to be a guest there. Mata Lahahe Masa. But they don't have room in the city to have him for a guest. Amar called Avad Rachmana Latav, and he says again this phrase: everything that God does is for the good. Azalubas bedavra, the havi bahade tarnagula v'chamer v'shagara. He goes into a field instead to stay there. By the way, the fact that nobody could have him, what point in his life does this situate Rabbi Akiva? How, if you had to guess that he was a certain age, how old would you think that he is in the happening of this story? Tell me an age. What?
Under
40. Under 40 or over 40?
Under.
Under why?
Because when he was Rabbi Akiva, of course everyone would want, ever be like begging to have him over.
Good. Okay, good. But if he was an Am Haaretz, what would you not find? right? If he was already Rabbi Akiva, there was no way that there wouldn't have a space for him, and, you know, someone else would go sleep on the floor, you know, whatever. There was no way that Rabbi Akiva could go to a city and not have space for him. But if he was an Am Haaretz, what would you not see?
Him saying that.
Good, him saying, called Avad Rahman al-Watav of it.
That transitional pre-state.
Exactly. So this story, logically, must be in the space between when he starts learning the Aleph Beis and when he becomes Rabbi Akiva. Okay? And this is the story they tell about him in this stage, when he's in this stage. Okay? He goes into the field, and again, he has with him a rooster and a donkey and a candle. Asa zika chavra l'shagra. By the way, what does this sound like? Asa shunra the achla de tarnagolia. Asa arye achla l'chamra. Doesn't it sound like Chad Gadya? Right? I don't know anyone else in Chazal that sounds like Chad Gadya, but there's got to be like some connection there. I have no idea. Like, maybe we'll talk about it over Pesach, right? So again, a wind blows out his candle, a cat eats his rooster, and a lion eats his donkey. By the way, a lion? Am I not sharing my screen anymore? Like, this was not a safe field to be in. This was a very dangerous field to be in. There is a lion who ate his donkey, who was next to him in the field, right? This is no campgrounds. Called Avar Rahman al-Latav. And the whole time he just said, everything that Hashem does is for the good. In the middle of the night, like basically a Roman legion sweeps in and takes the entire region captive. And only Rabbi Akiva was saved because he was neither in the city, nor did he have a candle, a rooster, or a donkey to give himself away. And what's the end of that story? Right? This is the important part. The end of this story is not that Rabbi Akiva, you know, makes a party and he throws a thing and he brings a korban todah and he makes a sudas hodah. Right? What's the end of this story? Apparently, everyone is amazed and shocked at what happened. And what's Rabbi Akiva's reaction? Amru laho. He says to all these people who are like, oh my God. Amru laho. Lo amru laho. That's what I was saying, guys. That's what I told you. Kol mash asakash parachu hakola tova. He's like totally non-fazed, right? It seems to be they're all gasping. They tell this story as like a legend about Rabbi Akiva because it changed their perspective about something, but it seems to be that it really did not change Rabbi Akiva's perspective about anything. This is not maybe one of the things that Rabbi Akiva would have included in his own biography, because we see he's actually basically like totally nonplussed by this whole thing. He's like, okay, of course. I mean, yeah, guys, that's what I was saying all along. Let's read the next one. Okay, again, a very famous pair of chazals about Rabbi Akiva and the Chorban. Kvahriya Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Yoshua, Rabbi Akiva. Okay, so those two of those four were Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Akiva was their student and at some point really basically becomes their colleague and even becomes a colleague of his Rabbi, Rabbi Tarfon. And the pair, all five of them, were the ones who were in the Pesach story, who were in Bnei Brak until their students came and said, right, Rabinu, Higiyaz, Man, Shal Kiresh, Man, Shal Shacharis. Okay, so anyways, that pair, that group of people, Mahalchim B'derech, V'shemu Kol Hamona Shal Romi, Mefalta, Barachok Mea, Be'esri Mil. They hear like the loud ruckus sounds of a very loud and ruckus Roman city, 120 miles away, right? Very far away. Hichilu Bochin, and they start crying. Rabbi Akiva Mesachik, and Rabbi Akiva starts laughing at the same time. Amru Lo, they say to him somewhat incredulously, B'pnei Ma'ata Mesachik, are you insane? Why are you laughing? And again, he's the junior one there. Why are you laughing? Amru Lahem, and he says to them, Well, he's just as confused, maybe, right? As long as we don't think that he's being ironic, he's like, why are you crying? Amrulo, halalu kushim shemishtachavim la'adzim mechtirim la'avodas kochavim yoshvim betach v'hashkeit. These like horrible people who, by the way, slaughtered everybody's relatives who was currently alive, right? Again, imagine the Nazis, right? The Nazis are still alive. They slaughtered everybody. They're still alive. They're apparently alive and well, and they're sitting happily, peacefully, doing their ruckus, horrible practices. V'anu, and us, b'zadom ragle elokeinu nisref be'esh. The palace of God basically is burnt in fire. Velo nifcha, and we shouldn't cry about that? Question mark, exclamation point, question mark, exclamation point. Amru lahem, he says to them, lekachani mitzachik. Oh, funny. That's actually the same reason that I'm laughing. Ma la'ovre ritzono kach, if that's what happens to those who transgress as well, la'osei ritzono achas kama v'kama. How much more so to those who keep as well? Okay, and again, it's a similar story. This one is actually, for some reason, a little bit more famous, even though it's more complex, right? They're walking. Shufam achasaya. I have a rare time doing sources outside. Shufam achasaya. Olim liyushulayim. Kivan shiyu lahart sofim. Kiru b'dayim. Kivan shiyu lahart bais ru. Shual. Shiyatim beis ha-kadashim. Right? They see a fox running out of the kosher kadashim. Yitzchilo hein bochim. Rabbi Akiva mitzachik. They start crying. Rabbi Akiva laughs. Amru lo b'bnei ma'atam mitzachik. Maybe a little less incredulous this time because he had a good answer last time. Amru lahem. He said to them, b'nei ma'atam bochim. Why are you crying? Amru lo makom shakasuv bo b'hazar ha- Kariv Yumas, or the most holy place that anyone who is a foreigner would die if they go in. And now there are foxes there, we're not going to cry. And he says, ah, it's the same reason I'm laughing. And again, he quotes this pasuk in Yeshaya, in which Hashem says that there are two edim that are, you know, testified that there are two, either, okay, I can't do it outside, see this? Either li edim ne'amanim. It's Uriah Cohen versus Zachariah ben Yevarchiyahu. Okay, Yevarchiyahu. So he basically links the two of the Nevi'im, Uriah and Zachariah. Uriah gave a very sad, horrible nevuah about the Chorban bias, and Zachariah gave a very uplifting nevuah. It's famous. Odiyashu zekinu zekinu zbechovas Yerushalayim. A very beautiful, visionary prophecy about the rebuilding and comfort of Yerushalayim. And Rabbi Akiva says, we see in that pasuk in Yeshaya that the nevuah of Uriah and the nevuah of Zachariah are linked to each other. And now that we see with our eyes the nevuah of Uriah coming true, this horrible thing, now we know for sure that the nevuah of Zachariah would come true. Achshav shenis kaima nevuah so shel Uriah biyadua shenevuah so shel Zachariah miskaimas b'lashan hazeh. Amru lo nesedin, this beautiful line, I get chills every time I read it. Akiva nechamtanu, Akiva nechamtanu. Akiva, you've comforted us. Akiva, you've comforted us. Again, what essential characteristic of Rabbi Akiva is present there? 1, 2, 3. Think about it. For the death of Rabbi Akiva. Again, Mishah Shaosiu as Rabbi Akiva lahariga zman kriyash mahaya. V'hayu sorkim as brasaram and mistregel shal barzel. V'hayu makabal lav as omach hushamayim. So again, in the middle of this torture, he is makabal on himself, omach hushamayim. Omer lo talmidim, his talmidim say to him, Rabbeinu, ad kan? Really? You could just imagine, right? Like sometimes the stories of the say of like what their talmidim said to their rabbanim. We don't talk like that these days, but you know, we learn a lot when we do. Rabbeinu, ad kan? For real? Like this is how far it goes for you? Amru lahem, and he says to them, basically incredulously again, right? Kol yamai hisim itzar al pasuk zeh. What do you mean? My whole life I was in pain. I was in pain on this pasuk, b'chol nafshecha, where it says, afilu hu natels nafshecha, that you should again be makabel ul machosh yamayim, even if Hashem takes your soul. Amarti. When is it going to be my chance to actually fulfill this mitzvah? And now, finally, it is my chance. I'm not going to take it. And he draws out the echad until he dies. Whew. Okay, that's some of the stories, many, many, many of them, some of which we mentioned, stories of Rabbi Akiva. If you had to talk about the basic characteristic of Rabbi Akiva that ties these together, and again, no wrong, right or wrong answer, like, so let's think about it together. What characteristic do you think that Chazal is trying to pull through all of these stories? Let's say. Again, in parentheses, I have to say this again, I'm so sorry. The point is not the answer, right? If I pulled 4 different stories, or if there's someone else teaching this class, someone else would have said a different thing, right? The point is not the right answer to this. The point is, think about this first, right? Think about the basic characteristic that you can learn from these stories about who Rabbi Akiva was in essence. What would you say that it was?
Can I, Devin? So there's a lot of things that came into my head, but like I think now that I've heard all these stories, you know, sometimes there's like a person that thinks in a way that's like not separate from everybody, but kind of like their own way, like it's unfazed by anything else. Like when he was in Am Haaretz, he had a belief, and so like it wasn't fazed until something inside of him, like he came to that realization. It wasn't from an outside source. And then throughout his encounters in the forest and in the Beis Hamikdash, like the same thing as well. Like it's like emuna pshuta, but like internally, right? And so that's why he's different than our other chachamim during that time. So he has like a fuller picture because it's unfazed by anything from the outside, and he's not feeding himself from the outside. It's something that's just coming from to the inside, like coming to all these realizations himself.
Good. Okay, awesome. I love that perspective, right? There's some piece of him that you see is this sort of like internal spark with which he looks at the world in a different way than other people, but that makes sense to other people and resonates and is wise. Good. What else? Agree or disagree? Something else?
I think he's, can you hear me?
Yeah.
I think he's characterized by hope, like the characters from Good Hope.
Good, right? So there's some sense of this like hope, right? And the optimism that inundates the way that he looks at the world. Okay, I love that. I love that. Shira?
I was going to go according a little bit to what Fana was saying that, sorry, I have a cold, that he's kind of like a leader, but he doesn't really know it. So he has people turning to him and he's saying things in a way that puts him in a position where he's the one that's kind of making a call. But I don't think he knows his power until he fully gets his power, if that makes sense.
That's fascinating. So there's some piece of him, maybe like charisma, or right, there's magnetism, or there's some piece of him that draws people to him, and therefore like maybe one of his essential characteristics is power vis-a-vis other people, so to speak. Right? Not in like a manipulative weird way, but just in like an essential character way. Good. What else? What else did other people see?
I saw maybe like this like MS, like everything that he like, maybe this is kind of similar to what Khan said, but like he sees what he feels like is MS and like falls through, like with the fox, like he saw like this is obvious that like the Torah is coming Nevi'im, like their prophecies are coming true, like this, like I don't know, I feel like that was kind of, I can't like explain, I'm not doing the job explaining why I feel like that was his characteristic, but like it's just like he sees it, he feels like it's truth and like goes with it and sticks with it.
Good. Okay, good. So what struck me was really what Carrie and Hannah and Shira and Ayelet, right? A little bit less Ayelet. Sorry, I love you, but I think it's going to come back later. What you were saying, don't worry. It will make a reappearance on the stage. Right, what struck me, and again, it's not right or wrong, what struck me was more what you were saying. The word that I would put to it is really based on the strengths that we did last time. Those of you who were here last time we did one of these kind of like outside chaburas, I gave a list, let me stop sharing and pull it up. There was a list of like positive character strengths that I just pulled from basically wherever. I like went through a few lists and put them together. And one of the strengths that really struck me as like a word to put to that was perspective, right? Perspective being defined as this, being able to provide counsel to others, looking at the world in ways that make sense to others, right? Coupled with a certain creativity, thinking of novel and productive ways to do things, right? There's a certain like piece of Rabbi Akiva that sees a very different reality than other people naturally, right? It seems to be a natural way that he is oriented to look at the world. But when he explains it to people, they're like, oh, you know, you're right. I see that too, right? There's one second. Let me see if I have this as my source sheet. I hope I didn't. I might have not saved it, but I hope I did save it. You ever see, oh man, you ever see like those, you know, like those pictures that look like a duck and then like, if you look at it the other way, it's a rabbit, right? No, anybody? No. Hold on a second. I know you're all, some of you are like, yeah. And some of you are like, I have no idea what you're talking about. So now you just challenged me to pull it up for you. Okay. Let's say this. So it's kind of like this, right? It's kind of like as if you see this, right? And let's say everybody saw the duck. And Rabbi Akiva's like, well, yeah, it's a duck. But if you look at it from the other direction, it's a rabbit. And they're like, oh, you know, we were seeing a duck, but now that we look at it this way, it is a rabbit, right? And that's maybe one of his like essential strengths with which he approaches the world is, again, being able to see things in a very different way from a very different perspective, again, perspective, right? A very different angle than other people. But when he shares it with other people, like Carrie said, right, it resonates with them that that's actually the MS, that that is what's going on, that that is more accurate of a way to look at reality, right? And again, the first one that he starts off, he does on himself. Being, right, very important. So why do we care? Why is it important? Why are we analyzing the personality, so to speak, the personality? I don't like those words. Why are we analyzing, you know, what Chazal is teaching us about Rabbi Akiva? Both obviously because Chazal shares that we should analyze it, but also because that happens to be the root of tshuva. That happens to be the root of Avodas Hashem and tshuva. Just happens to be. So let's see, okay? This we learned in Pirkei Avos in probably 2016, maybe 17. It blew my mind. I'm sort of banking on all of you guys having been too young and starry-eyed at like, well, learning Pirkei Avos to remember it. I hope you do. I hope you remember it. But again, learning it differently in a different time is also important. So let's learn it again, okay? This is the beginning, the end, the middle of Perek Beis in Pirkei Avos, okay? Amar Lahem, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, who again, by the way, right, is Rabbi Akiva's Rebbe's Rebbe's. He's the one at some point, when I know what the point of this is, I will compare the deaths of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai to Rabbi Akiva because it is fascinating and mind-blowing, but I don't have like a so what factor yet, so I can't do that yet. I kind of like, I graphed it out to do here and I was like, nope, it doesn't really make any sense. But Yochanan ben Zakkai, again, himself, just these people like blow my mind who they were. Fine, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai asks his students, okay? Amar Lahem, he asks his students. By the way, who were his students? Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yoshua, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Elazar ben Arach. Okay, so some of those you'll recognize because they're the same ones in the story with Rabbi Akiva and the fox and the Roman city. Okay, so again, these are his Talmidim. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai asks them, Amru lahem, Tu'ru'u ezeh liderach yeshara sheyidbak ba'adam. Go find the correct path that a person should cling to. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Rabbi Eliezer says, a good eye. Rabbi Ayin Tov. Rabbi Yeshua Omer is Chaver Tov. He said, a good friend. Rabbi Yossi Omer is Shachin Tov. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Harua Es Hanola, someone who sees the results of the action, of what will be. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Leiv Tov. Amar Lahem, Roa Ani Es Divrei Eliezer Ben Arach, Mi Divreichem, Shebechal Divrav Divreichem. Does anyone remember learning this together? Yes? Oh, Esti. Yes. Carrie, yes. Oh, love you guys. Okay? Good. So what, I want to challenge you. Rabbeinu Yona first starts to explain what Ayin Tov is, then he starts to explain what Chaver Tov is, then he starts to explain what Shachin Tov is. When you're looking for a neighborhood, don't only look at whether or not the apartment is nice, also look at whether or not the neighbors is nice, and then he stops himself. And he says, this is how the Rishonim explain it, and it isn't right. It isn't right. Why isn't it right? He's like, it's logically, we can't say that that's what this Mishnah is about. This is what an Ayin Tov means, this is what a good friend is, and this is why you should find one, this is what a good neighbor is, and this is why you should find one. Why can't we say that? What's the problem with this Mishnah if we pay Rishit like that? And that's where it's going to switch us.
One excludes the other?
One excludes the other?
Like, I don't know, I'm not sure if like this is what we said in the class when we were together, but like basically they've told... takes everything into account.
Good. So that's why he liked the, like, so to speak, the response of Rabbi Elazar ben Arach over the other ones. By the way, who remembers what happened to Rabbi Elazar ben Arach? Meaning, why don't we see him anywhere else? Do you remember? Who remembers this? This is what the class, like, blew my mind. So it blew my mind at the time. We're doing something else this time. What happens to Rabbi Elazar ben Arach? He's the favorite. Why isn't he the one who shows up next? Why isn't he walking with Rabbi Akiva? In the next story that we see after Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai leaves the scene, and now it hands down to the next generation. Because he went off the derech. He moved to a resort town and he lost his Torah. Which just goes to teach you that just because Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai thought that his answers were the best and that he was clearly the brightest student, and we have Mishnayos and Pirkei Avos that talk about it and very clearly single out Rabbi Elazar ben Arach as the most important person here, who decided to take on the mantle of the Jewish people. Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, more than anyone else. And that's why our Mesorah has Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua walking with Rabbi Akiva, and all these stories, Rabbi Eliezer and Yeshua. It doesn't matter who has the best answer and who the Rebbe thinks is the best. It matters who takes the responsibility to the next generation. And that was Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. Okay? In parentheses, I just had to say that once we're talking about these people. Fine. But here's what Rabbi Akiva, this is what Rabbi Yonah says. Rabbi Yonah says, we can't perish it that way because why? And I'm sure this went off in some of your heads, but like you didn't pay that much attention to it. Because Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is asking them, what's the one good path? What's the correct path that a person should go down? And at least two of those responses have nothing to do with the person. Which ones? Which two?
Shachin Tov.
Good. And?
Can you repeat them?
Yeah. Ayin Tov, Chaver Tov, Shachin Tov, Haroes Anolad, and Lev Tov.
Chaver Tov.
Good, Carrie, right? Two of those are very problematic if I tell you, Sarah, your correct path in life that you should follow down is to make sure that Esti is your friend and Carrie is your neighbor. Okay? This is a big problem because what happens if Carrie moves to Florida? What happens if Esti moves to a resort town? Just kidding, right? What happens if Esti, I don't know, has some existential dilemma for, you know, a year of her life and Sarah's stuck? Now Sarah's lost her correct path because she's been dependent on Esti and Carrie, right? It can't be that Sarah's correct path that Sarah should follow is making sure that she's around Esti and Carrie. Listen, it's really important. Social influence is really important, but it can't be the correct path, right? Rabbeinu is like, it can't be. So he goes, am I still sharing my screen? No. Share screen. Let's go. Rabbeinu Yonah, what does he say? Kane Pershu Harishonim. Eino Darach Yashar. Hilafi Divraim Ayin Tov, Velev Tov, Haim Divraim Shabagufo. Some of those things are things inherent with him that he has accountability for, that he's responsible for. V'chaver V'shachin Tov V'shalachayrim. But hold on a second. Some of those Pershim mean that his good path is other people's? It can't be. Al Kane Yishal Parash Zosa Mishnah Dover Dibor Alofanav. We have to explain this Mishnah as something that's talking about himself itself, something that's self-referential. The point of this Mishnah, therefore, what he's about to say, is not the answers to the question. We think that the point of this Mishnah, what this Mishnah is trying to teach us, is that Lev Tov is more important, or maybe the answers of everybody, or maybe that everyone has their own answers. He's like, no, that is not the way to parish of the Mishnah. The way to parish this Mishnah, what this Mishnah means to say, is that the point, that basically the so what factor of this Mishnah is the question and not the answers. Where did Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai come off asking a question like that? Where did he get that question? What's the one path that people should follow? Excuse me. We have 613 mitzvos. What do you mean? We have tons and tons and tons of mitos. Maybe not 613. We have a lot of mitos, a lot of good mitos. We have a lot of mitzvos. What do you mean? What's the one path that people should follow? What are you asking? And he's like, that is the so what factor here. That is the lesson that we are supposed to learn. I'm sorry, I stopped sharing again. Okay? Someone could yell at me every time I do that. The point of this Mishnah is to teach you that you, like them, have to do what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai just prompted you to do. Of all the good mitos that you could have, of all the good mitos that we could think about in our lives, you have to find one mida lihios shalem ba, and to be complete in it, to be wholesome in it, to embody it, to enmesh yourself in that. Why? Because the other 612 don't matter? Because the other tons of mitos don't, we don't care about them? No, because strategically this actually makes a lot more sense. Why? Leo Shalim Ba Ki Tov La Adam La Echos Bemida Achas Bishlemus. It is a better strategy. It is better for you as a Jew and as a person to find one Mida and be wholesomely embody that. The Nakil Alav Lahasig Mi Mena as Kolha Midos Achashuvos. And from that one Mida, you have easier and better access to every other good Mida than. Then to have a little bit of a lot of good mitos, but not to be wholesome in all of them. Not because we're doing the trade-off. You hear what the trade-off is? It's not be whole in one versus be pieces of many. You want to have pieces of many. But the way to have pieces of many is to be really good at one thing and to be shalim in it. And from that, this is the hack of Avodas Hashem. This is the approach to Avodas Hashem. This is the approach to tshuva. You pick one thing that you pick that makes sense to you, that's close to you, and that you could access in as much of a wholesome way as you can. And from there, you will find that you have better mitos all over the place than had you split yourself into a bunch of whole different kinds of mitos and taken a little piece here and a little piece there, and you're trying to work on this, Ellen, and you're trying to work on this, and you're trying to work on this little piece over here, and this little piece of Lashon Hara, and this little piece of patience, and this little piece of that, right? It's much, much better if you work on just patience. And you will find that you speak less Lashon Hara if you work on patience than if you're working on patience and Lashon Hara at the same time. That's what he's saying. So again, let's go back to the stories of Rabbi Akiva. Ready? This is what I want you to do. I'm going to share with you the screen of, again, just 16 character traits. They're not right or wrong. There's plenty of inventories, okay? And as we go through the stories, think about, in this story, assuming that Rabbi Akiva is coming from the basic strength of perspective, right? The basic strength of character, whatever it is, or hope, it doesn't matter, right? Whatever basic character strength he's coming at, what other mitos do you see being expressed in this story? Okay? You understand? Oh, one second. Share. Where are my strengths? Here are my strengths. Ready? Uh-oh. Nope. Okay, ready? Do we see this? You see what it is? I'm just going to read them out loud. No right or wrong answers. Gratitude, hope, humor, humility, deliberateness, love, kindness, creativity, bravery, persistence, open-mindedness, love of learning, perspective, positivity, belief, and connectedness, okay? Let's say the story with the rock, right? Rabbi Akiva was coming from his different way of looking at the world. What other mitos do you see there? Say it out loud. Anything you find. What other mitos was he also encompassing in his being? What other positive mitos was he also hitting?
Belief.
Belief.
Positivity.
Positivity. Right? Belief in himself, or whatever you meant by that, right? Belief generally that there's something more. Positivity that I could change. That this means something.
I thought deliberateness.
Okay.
I thought it because he was thinking how his actions, like, he wasn't just thinking that the world runs and whatever the water, whatever, he was thinking about it in terms of, like, there's a purpose to this and I'm going to learn from it. And the purpose is that I can, like, deliberately change my actions.
Love it. Okay, Shira, good. I want you all to do what Shira did, okay? When you offer the Mida, I want you to give me a one-liner of why you said that, okay? So I don't have to guess at it. Because I'm sure you guys are all coming from better places than anything that I would guess. Okay, good. Let's do the second one, right? The second one of Kol Da'avad Rachmana L'Tav Avad. Everything that God does is for the good, right? Where he's like, everyone tells this story, this legend of Rabbi Akiva. And he's like, for him, it was like... You know, what other mitos do you see there?
Persistence.
Persistence because?
He constantly repeats that. It's like and it comes from belief. Like, he believes in something, and, like, he kind of ingrains that in him through that persistence.
Love it. Good. What else?
Open-mindedness.
Because?
Because you need to take new ideas into account.
Awesome. Love it. New ideas, new ways of looking at things.
I think humility, because you need that in order to, like, think that, like, things aren't, like you don't deserve them, or, mm-hmm. like, you know, like, anybody who doesn't have humility would be like, what, like, can't believe you won't, like, host me or whatever, and, like.
Good, awesome, I love that, Carrie, good. Okay, let's do the next story. Which is, again, they all cry and he laughs. What do we see there?
Belief again.
Good, belief again, because?
And persistence, like.
Mm-hmm. Positivity for sure, right? Yeah, let's hope and positivity come up in almost all of these here. And again, might have been a different way to look at the core belief running, the core strength running through him. And humor too, right? He's laughing. Maybe. Okay, what about his death?
Connectedness.
Tell me.
Not in the sense necessarily that the
You could ignore the little definition.
but more that I guess when saying the last sukkah that will get him closer to Hashem.
Mm-hmm. What else?
Bravery.
Good. That's what I was thinking. Also good.
Well, because it's pretty obvious, but mm-hmm. he. Stood Al Kiddush Hashem and was literally davening as it was happening to him.
Mm-hmm. Right, and interestingly, also joy, right? Which is not one of the things here. It doesn't have to be only these, right? Obviously, many mitos besides these, right? There's a certain joy that he's able to access also from that place. Okay, good. So the point here, again, at us heading, I want you to take two things away from this. The first is, you know, about our own lives, just being inspired, so to speak, or being connectedness, that connectedness to Rabbi Akiva. Okay, Rabbi Akiva, again, had this different way of looking at reality that resonated. It was the duck, it was the rabbit, right? And it's just as true. But like Ayel had said, it's so much more hopeful. It's so much more inherently positive. And what Carrie said, it's so much more inherently true when you look at it like that. So thinking about our own lives and our own, a challenge that we have on the table in front of us, you know, what would Rabbi Akiva say about it? Is there a way that it looks like a rabbit to us and actually it's a duck, or the other way around? Or like, is there a way that we could bring that perspective to our own lives? And the second thing is, and this is more important, is that this is really like a very practical step for us in El Zman heading into Yomim Noraim. That as we're doing tshuva, I think we have the propensity, we sometimes have the habit of splitting ourselves into many smaller pieces and that are usually negative, and trying to work on a whole bunch of little negative pieces that make us feel very chakak, right? Very chiseled out and kind of like strewn pieces of stone. And what Rabbi Akiva teaches us, again, you know, from that first thing is like the Divrei Torah should be smooth. And there's a much smoother way to work with ourselves, and that's what this is. So let me give you a practical example, okay? Which is, again, coming off of splitting up something that we have to work on, bringing a whole encapsulation of a positive aspect of ourselves to work on that, instead of splitting it into tiny pieces of a negative thing and working on that. So for example, again, I was trying to think of an example. I say this all the time, tongue in cheek, but I actually really mean it. You know, God graced me with very, very, basically very bad mitos, so that I have a whole bunch of like really great examples to give you guys all the time. So one of my bad mitos, which I always will say publicly here so that we could work on, you know, I can give some real examples, is that I have a very hard time apologizing. I have a very hard time saying I'm sorry for things. Forget about saying I'm sorry and meaning it. That would be like a more step. I just have a hard time saying I'm sorry generally. Like, you know, Aryeh was outside a few weeks ago hitting a baseball like towards my neighbor's house, and at some point it hit the neighbor's house. Listen, it wasn't like a hard baseball, you know what I mean? I'm not gonna let him like hit a hard baseball. It wouldn't have broken anyone's windows, but like my neighbor has like a house and sports cars, and he doesn't want them to be hit by any balls, which I understand. So at some point he comes out, we have a very good relationship with him, Sam. You guys, some of you guys know Sam, right? So Sam comes out and he's like, hey, can you like, can Aryeh stop hitting balls at my house? I don't want my house to be hit by balls, right? So my reaction is like, yeah, I told him not to, you know, shoot in that direction. Probably I should have given him a different ball. Maybe we shouldn't play here, right? And Jeff, who was outside, goes like this, sorry, Sam. Like really genuine, like heartfelt, sorry, Sam. And I remember being like, oh my God, like I can't do that. I can't snap react to something and be like, sorry, Sam. Right? So for example, the one that I want to work with is that I had a friend over here the other day, and she has like a 4-month-old baby girl who at some point like Shifra like must have picked up and dropped, or didn't pick, or just somehow like, you know, hit, and the baby was crying. The baby started crying, and only Shifra and her other daughter was in the room, and Shifra was like, I didn't do anything. And the daughter was like, it was Shifra, and the baby's like crying, right? So it was definitely Shifra who did something, being Shifra. Anyways, so, you know, so now the baby's crying, and I'm like, you know, Shifra, we're not supposed to touch other people's babies, blah, 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 right? And in my head, I'm like, I should apologize to Michelle. Like, I should just be like, I'm sorry that my kid manhandled your baby. This is, like, a normal thing to apologize for. Not because it's, like, my fault, you know, not because I take ownership, but just, like, I should just say, like, oh, I'm sorry. And I felt like I couldn't say it. I couldn't, and I'm close with Michelle. She's one of my really good friends. This is a situation that was not my fault, you know, and, like, I just couldn't say sorry. And thinking about it afterwards, it's like, well, listen, what I could like, you know, try to chop myself into pieces and try to figure out why I can't say sorry. And I can't say sorry because I have some pathological thing from like my childhood of like saying sorry and apologizing and owning my own space and blah, blah, blah. Right. Or it could be like, listen, let me go back to this list. Remember this big list of strengths. So humility of being like, I'm so sorry, is not my strength, is not one of my strengths, but love of learning is. So it's going to be a lot harder for me to be able to like, I'm going to have to really kill myself to be able to be like, sorry, Sam. I could spend my whole life trying to do that. But what I could do if I'm working on trying to apologize as something that I'm working on this year, I could very much be like, Michelle, I'm really sorry that Shifra just did that. Or not, right. I could be like, Michelle, I don't know how to get her to stop doing that. She does it to Rafael also, and I keep telling her not. Have you learned anything? Do you take any approaches with your kids that really work better? Like, what do you think that I could be saying better? And like, I'm sorry. right? That's an I'm sorry that's being coached in a love of learning. And like, that is a step for me, but it's not destroying myself. It's much smoother. And it's coming from my encapsulation of love and learning, which now includes humility. So again, that's the kind of avoda that we could be taking and that I challenge myself and you to take also, right? Instead of chiseling, you know, hacking a piece of stone out of yourself, like, let's try to make it more smooth. Let's try to come at it and approach it from an area of one of our strengths and being shalem in one of our strengths and whether or not that itself will do better work on our midos and what we're trying to do than had we tried to work on ourselves from a negative perspective.